I want us to remember kind of the purposes of the text, particularly as we move into what will be a challenging text this week, and not because there's anything awkward in it, but just because it's there, and that I feel like what God is asking us to move into is going to sound awkward or challenging to us. I want us to remember the purposes of the text together. So the text of Exodus is this amazing narrative of a group of people who found themselves in slavery. And that by the work and gracious intervention of this God, whom they kind of peripherally knew, but didn't really know deeply, that this God comes in and scoops them out of slavery. And then what's really amazing is that Exodus doesn't end at chapter 15. Oftentimes in the storybooks that we read or the movies that we see, that we end the Exodus narrative at the crossing of the Red Sea. And quite honestly, I want to say that oftentimes in our presentation of the gospel, in our walking with Christ, we end at the crossing of the Red Sea in our discipleship. Is that we've been saved. Hallelujah, let's sing the song and let's go home. But that the interesting thing is that Exodus doesn't end at chapter 15. It ends at chapter 40. And there's a lot of stuff that happens between chapter 16 and chapter 40. None probably bigger than the receiving of the law in Exodus 20 through 24. And that this law teaches us how to live. And so that this group of people who have been shaped and molded by the ways of Egypt, by the ways of Pharaoh, get taught a new way to live. They're asked to change the way they think, and view the world, and that they're asked to be moved into this type of reality. I want to tell us that as we read the text today, and as we continue to live throughout the week, and as we think about this text, it's not my goal to get you to the Red Sea. My goal isn't just simply to get you saved. My goal is that you would live as Christ wants you to live. I want you to get to Exodus 40, where the presence of God rests upon the tent, the tabernacle, and God dwells with his people. Because that's what God really wants out of this relationship. Is he pulled you out of your sin, not just simply so you can go hallelujah, that's part of it, but he pulled you out of your sin because he desperately wants to be with you, and that is part of the gig. He wants to be with you, and he wants you to live in harmony with him, and part of living in that harmony is that you live his ways. So we're going to be diving into a narrative today that wrestles with that. So would you please open to Exodus chapter 5? Exodus chapter 5, we'll be reading 5:1 through 6:1. Afterward, Moses and Aaron went and said to Pharaoh, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, let my people go. Then they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness." But Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and moreover, I will not let Israel go." Then they said, "The God of the Hebrews has met with us. Please let us go a 3 days' journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with sword." But the king of Egypt said to them, "Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people away from their work? Get back to your burdens." And Pharaoh said, "Behold, the people of Israel are now many, and you make them rest from their burdens." The same day, Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people and the foremen, "You shall no longer give the people straw to make bricks, as in the past. Let them go and gather straw for themselves. But the number of bricks that they made in the past you shall impose upon them. You shall by no means reduce it, for they are idle. Therefore they cry, 'Let us go and offer sacrifice to our God.' Let heavier work be laid on the men that they may labor at it, and pay no regard to these lying words." So the taskmasters and the foremen of the people went out and said to the people, "Thus says Pharaoh, I will not give you straw. Go and get your straw yourselves wherever you can find it, but your work will not be reduced in the least." So the people were scattered throughout all the land of Egypt to gather stubble for straw. The taskmasters were urgent, saying, "Complete your work, your daily task each day, as when there was straw." And the foremen of the people of Israel, whom Pharaoh's taskmasters had set over them, were beaten and were asked, "Why have you not done all your task of making bricks today and yesterday, as in the past?" Then the foremen of the people of Israel came and cried to Pharaoh, "Why do you treat your servants like this? No straw is given to your servants, yet they say to us, 'Make bricks.' And behold, your servants are beaten, but the fault is in your own people." But he said, "You are idle. You are idle. That is why you say, 'Let us go and sacrifice to the Lord.' Go now and work. No straw will be given you, but you must still deliver the same number of bricks." The foremen of the people of Israel saw that they were in trouble when they said, "You shall by no means reduce your number of bricks, your daily task each day." They met Moses and Aaron, who were waiting for them as they came out from Pharaoh. And they said to them, "The Lord look on you and judge, because you have made us stink in the sight of Pharaoh and his servants, and have put a sword in their hand to kill us." Then Moses turned to the Lord and said, "O Lord, why have you done evil to this people? Why did you ever send me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all." But the Lord said to Moses, "Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. For with a strong hand, he will send them out. And with a strong hand, he will drive them out of his land." It's the word of the Lord for the people of the Lord today. There's been an interesting shift in American society over the last 25, 30 years or so. It's really a development of our economy and our socioeconomic structures and systems. To think back over the past 250 years of American history, that we started obviously as an agricultural society, that we were people who, the wealthy, owned lots of land. They had plantations and owned slaves and that to work that land for them, but that they themselves were actually working people. It's actually interesting that we can tell the weather of significant stretches of northern Virginia throughout the 1700s because Thomas Jefferson would write in his journal all of the conditions of the soil and the conditions of the weather for the day as he went out to go work. This changed significantly throughout the 1800s. Many of you know from your history books, I'm going to throw a historical term at you, that the Industrial Revolution completely changed the face of the American socioeconomic realities. That in Europe as well. And that the development of factories and machines that would produce products that would drive an economy suddenly changed things. And that this was the world in which we lived from really in its full development in the 1870s and 1880s up until about 30 years ago. Now, there's something interesting that happens in that mentality, and I want us to focus on this for a second. Lean in, because this is where Pharaoh is, and we need to address this. Is that this Industrial Revolution era, that socioeconomic status was connected to leisure. So if you had the time and the money to be involved in leisure activities, going to the cinema, owning a yacht, being a member of the country club and playing golf, that these were leisure activities that the wealthy were able to do, so that your goal was to obtain these because then you had wealth. That has significantly and drastically changed. To give you an idea, you can look it up on your own. I was thinking about showing it, but I don't think I'm going to. But if you look up the difference in Cadillac commercials, you know, Cadillac is, you know, a high-end car company. That Cadillac commercials in the 80s, you might remember them, Cadillac style. It's the only way to travel, right? Cadillac style. Some of you who are old enough know those things. But look, you can look, Google them later, not now while I'm talking to you. But Google them later. But that Cadillac style, and that the images were of people throwing a rugby football around and hopping on a seaplane and playing golf and tennis. So that the idea was that if you had enough money and that you were leisure, that you were luxury class people that would buy a Cadillac vehicle, you had lots of extra time on your hands. I want to fast forward us now to 2014, the Super Bowl Cadillac commercial for their new vehicle that they released had Neil McDonough on it. Many of you might know him from various, Band of Brothers was actually one of his big films that he was involved in. But Neil McDonough, he was standing beside a pool, and it was his house, and he's going on a monologue about how the world looks at Americans weird because we work. And he says about this, these people in other countries take the entire month of August off. But then he says it's not really about all of the stuff. It's just that they want to work. We want to work. And he says we get the stuff because we don't take the whole month of August off, only 2 weeks. And he drives off in his new brand new Cadillac. But that it's something completely and utterly different being communicated about status that is there. What I want to say to you is that Pharaoh is in this place with the Israelite people where he only sees their ability, he only sees them as making bricks. They are the machines in his factory, if you will. He is the boss of the Industrial Revolution, the one, the capitalist who had the means and finances to be able to live in a palace separate from the plight of the people. Now, that's not our world. Our economy has completely shifted to a service-based economy. All of you medical professionals that are connected to us in some form, that's a service-based industry. Lawn maintenance. Now, yeah, there's physical work involved, but guess what? It's a service. Someone's paying you so they don't have to go sweat out in their front yard mowing their lawn. The list could go on, but that we are a service-based economy, and so that the whole thing changes. So the question becomes for us when we come to interpret this, because if we were in a factory setting and we are a manufacturing society, this would be easy to interpret. Pharaoh is our boss who keeps telling us, you're not producing enough, you're not producing enough, you're not producing enough, but that's not our world. So the question becomes, who is Pharaoh? Who's Pharaoh that keeps driving us to make more bricks? Who's Pharaoh that keeps driving us to say, I know that you want to go worship your God, but I'm not going to let you. Who's Pharaoh? That's the question that we need to answer. The answer to that question, I think, is really funny to me, at least ironic. Because in a service-based economy, that the two things that people desire in an employee is knowledge and ambition. That's the reason why we send kids off and put them into hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands worth of dollars worth of debt so they can have a knowledge to go get a job. Right? It's the other reason why we drive these kids everywhere so that way that they can prove to their college admissions counselor that they're an ambitious group of people. And that they just keep going and going because they want to go do everything. And that the reality is that we see that to us, the valuable person in our society is Neil McDonough, who his kids are playing around in the house. His wife just simply takes the newspaper from him in the middle of the commercial, doesn't interact with them at all, but is driven to go work because the ambitious person is the valuable person. Do you follow me? So the answer to the question about who Pharaoh is, it's me. I am my own Pharaoh. You are your own Pharaoh. And you want to know where I hear it? Because I'm so guilty of this. Someone comes up to me on a Wednesday night before church, says, hey, pastor, how are you doing? And I go, I'm so busy. I'm so busy. And my guess is that that's probably a default response for many of you. I can't add one more thing to my plate. Please, I cannot run my kid to one more sporting event. I can't run them to one more ballet recital. I can't do it. I don't have time in the schedule to put one more thing on the plate. But what we're really communicating by telling someone that I'm busy is not really that we're asking them to take anything off of our plate. What we're really communicating is I'm ambitious, therefore I am valuable. I can produce. I am creative. I can go do lots of cool stuff, and I have lots of energy. Let me go do it. Let me go do it. And then we complain because we want people to know that just how good we really are. Now, there's a couple of things to this that I need to address. For those of you out there that really are type A personalities that just go and go and go and go and go and go, and there are a couple of you in here. I've met you. And by the way, you share something. You've drank the same Kool-Aid that my wife drinks. Literally, 11 o'clock at night, and my wife's brain is just going. And it's been that way forever. And for me, I'm like, it is time for bed. Let's go. But those are some of you out there that you are just go, 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 go. I got something to do. What's the next task to complete? That it feels good for you to have a list and to be able to scratch it off. And not that you're really planning by the time that you get to the end of the list to stop. What you're going to do when you finish the end of that list is you're going to make a new one. So that way you can go and cross off that list too. You know who you are out there. And for you, those of you out there, I want to ask you the question, why are you so busy? Because your value is not wrapped up in what you do. Your value is wrapped up in the God who has come and says, look what I'm going to do to Pharaoh, the one that keeps making you make bricks, who only sees your value in your production. I'm going to destroy him. Because your value is not in what you can produce. Your value is in that you are a precious creation of my hands. Now, for some of you, and quite honestly, this is more me than it is my wife. Now, there are, don't get me wrong, I do have moments where I'm incredibly busy. But that it's easy for some of us that we just want to sound busy. And that if we really take a step back and look at how we spend our time and our energy, we would realize that we do a whole lot more things that have absolutely nothing to do with being productive and a whole lot more to do with just simply entertaining ourselves or doing something that is a diversion and those types of things. And for those of you who are there, I would say stop telling people that you're busy because you're not being honest. And again, it boils down to this, that we've bought into this structure that our value is wrapped up in being knowledgeable and ambitious. Because that's what employers want. That's how we obtain the upward mobility socially that we're looking for, is that we're ambitious people that know a lot and that we're creative and we can go and we can go do and we can go make people happy because we go and we do. And the whole time God is saying, well, this Yahweh God who says that I will destroy the systems of Pharaoh is the same God in his infinite power and infinite wisdom blesses the seventh day as a day of rest. God will not be defined by his creation. God will not be defined by his work. God is defined by God's self. And I come back, and we're going to talk about Sabbath in a little while once we get to Exodus 20, but I need to address it here because of our busyness, our movement. A weekend like this weekend, Memorial Day weekend, and we say thank you to those who sacrificed. And I'm going to say thank you for that. But that on a busy weekend like this, because some of you have picnics that you're going to go to today or tomorrow. How many of you had a family picnic this weekend somewhere? No? Nobody? Okay, there's a handful of you. All right. Up north in Pennsylvania, Memorial Day weekend is a big deal for picnics, partly because it's finally warm enough to cook outside. It's the truth. It's that you can finally bring the grill out and cook outside by the end of May. And so that everybody has picnics Memorial Day weekend. And I'm sorry that doesn't connect with the culture here, but that's what it is. But a weekend like this weekend, I was talking with the neighbor yesterday, and it was actually the neighbor's little daughter, and she was so excited. You want to know why? Her father had a three-day weekend. That was the words out of her mouth. 5-year-old girl. a five-year-old girl talking to me and Isaiah and Noah and Asher out in the front yard. And the first words off of her lips were, "I'm so happy my daddy doesn't have to go to work for 3 days." Think about that a moment, folks. That the longing of our entire beings is not that we go be doers or make believe that we're doers because it makes us feel better about ourselves, but that the reality is that we're to be investing ourselves into something different. Let's take a look at that quick. I want to take a look at chapter 6, verse 1. "Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh." This is the only words that the Lord actually speaks here. "See what I will do to Pharaoh. For with a strong hand he will send them out, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land." You see, what God does is that the bad news for us here today is that we are our own Pharaoh. We're the ones that are continually pushing ourselves to go do something else, to do more, or at least to make it look like we're really busy. That we are our own Pharaoh. And that God says, no, your value is not in that. Your value is in being my creation, being the one that I pour favor and grace upon. And that I stand above Pharaoh. I stand above the systems that Pharaoh creates that enslaves you to thinking that you need to prove your worth to people. But rather, allow yourself to be my child and to stand in the love and the grace and the truth that I have. And that there you will find rest for your souls. Jesus says it like this: "Take my yoke upon you. Take my yoke upon you. You'll find rest." The systems that we subscribe to are ones, as I just said, that are clamoring for us to do more, to do more, to do more, to do more. My challenge to you today is to hit the pause button and say, why? Why do I keep on needing to do more? Am I trying to prove something to someone? Why do I need to keep trying to do more? Or why do I got to keep telling people I need to do more? Hit the pause button, and will you allow yourself to be a part of that group of people who have been called out of slavery to enjoy Sabbath rest, to enjoy a rest that is meant to be recreating you, not by your own doing. A rest that's meant to say that my all in all is found in Jesus Christ. That I am utterly, as we sang earlier, that Lord, I need you. I am dependent upon you. And that in that place that you can allow the constructs that the world tries to shackle on us, the thinking of Pharaoh, that says that you are meant to be a doer, you are meant to be a producer, that we can allow that to fall away and say, no, I'm meant to be a worshiper of the living God. Release me. Because guess what? If you are your own Pharaoh, Jesus Christ is looking at you today saying, let my people go. Let my people go. Will you let yourself go? Or are you going to continue to be stuck in the patterns and systems that the world has created for us to be enslaved to?